Okay, today I'm in Victoria at Red Zone HQ with Steve Beaumont, owner and renowned NFL expert. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us today, Steve.
Thank you.
And we arranged this interview for as late as possible because you work through the night on a Monday night. Can you explain what the night's work is and entails?
Well, last night in particular was Monday Night Football, American style. So we had New England against Buffalo. Actually, it was an earlier kickoff because of the time difference this week, so I got an extra hour. But kickoff at 12:30 lasts about 3 hours. So it's all the risk management, the odds changing before kickoff, and then the in-play, keeping an eye on that and making sure the prices are all correct. And then getting to sleep after settling up at about 5 a.m.
So would that be for the bookmaking side of the business or from your punting side of the business?
That's the bookmaking side, yeah.
Okay. Now, just going back to your early days, I heard a story that you opened a betting shop and one of your nearest punters was Neil Channing. That can't have been a very good start.
Well, yes, we opened, myself and someone I'd worked with previously, James Cronk, opened a betting shop in Mitcham Road called Sportsline. And again, specialising in American football, but obviously had the betting shop with the racing and the credit office in the back where we took the American football bets. We took some adverts in the Racing Post and attracted the usual savvy punters that spot a new bookmaker and want to take advantage. And actually, there's quite a few people that walk through that door placing bets on the American football that still punt with us today at Red Zone.
Okay, now the laws in the USA are changing, so that's really going to mean the big time for a bookmaker that specialises in American sport, isn't it?
To a certain extent, yes. Obviously, they're changing in America state by state, so the days of actually being able to sit here in London and take bets from America are still a long way off, if ever going to happen. But it does mean that we've attracted attention from the states, and we're talking to people out there about possibly partnering up and getting involved out in the states. So yes, the answer is it's pretty exciting times for us.
And is that going to affect the way you bet as a punter?
Me personally, probably not really. You can only place bets out there within the states themselves. So until the landscape really forms out there and other states have set their legislation, I don't think there's any real changes that are going to be seen over here.
Right. Okay, now you specialise in NFL. Now, Little Bird tells me that it's a sport that's a bit on the wane with dwindling viewing figures and constant rule changes putting punters off. Have you noticed that at all?
From the viewing figures point of view, I'd take issue with that slightly. I think in America, the NFL is seeing it's as good of figures as they've ever seen in terms of viewing. And over here, I still believe it's Sky Sports' fastest growing sport, and it has been for a few years now. So I think from that point of view, it's still a growing sport. As far as the rule changes go, yes, that's a little, can be a little disconcerting. It turns it slightly more into more of a stage managed sport rather than a pure, you know, battle on the field, and it is rather off-putting. But I don't think it's affecting people's interest as far as betting goes. And obviously, when the penalties go for you, that's why they had the rule changes put in. But when they go against you, it was clearly not a penalty.
Okay, so what makes the NFL such an excellent betting sport?
Number of factors, I think. One is the stop-start nature of the sport, always giving you an opportunity to place a bet. The other is the fact that it's every play means something, whether even if it's just a 2-yard gain or a big pass. It's there's always something going on that can help form an opinion. And the game is generally in contention right up to the end, certainly from a handicap point of view. So it's a very exciting sport to bet on.
Now, when you sit down with a blank canvas to analyse each game, do you have like a rolling database that's cautiously predicted the outcome, or is each match sort of looked at in its...
There's a lot of work that goes into it from our point of view. We do have a number of databases that we keep. Some of them are you know, traditional statistics. Some of them are more bespoke, sort of our own scouting, and some of them are more of the analytics side of things. And we have a season-long model that's constantly sort of pricing up games in the future. So there is a base at the beginning of the week that we have that we can work from, but there's a lot more that goes into it. There's several different models that we run alongside the databases. One would be taking those player statistics and turning them into player ratings, and then another one will look at matchups, and then another one will put them all together and come up with the final figure. And all through those processes, there is an element of human input that goes into some of the variables within those models. So it's not quite a blank canvas, but it's certainly a lot of work that goes into it on a week-by-week basis.
Okay, now just going back to your earlier days, I understand you were in spread betting quite big. Now, did the spread betting firms understand and predate the exchanges that they needed to get rid of their big, you know, as in the Betfair introduced the premium charge? Did spread betting sort of realise that and predate them earlier on?
In terms of a premium charge as such, no. I think the difference is, you know, in Betfair, a big punter might take all the money from all the smaller guys, but at Sporting Index, we would take the risk ourselves. So if a big punter was winning, he was winning off us, and if the smaller punters were losing, they were losing to us. So it's very different. We didn't have to penalise the big winners in that sense. We had our normal risk management procedures, but no, I think it's very different from Betfair.
Okay, were big punters that won, and you know, sort of took the liquidity out, moved on, or did you keep them?
No, for the most part, I mean, we built our name at Sporting Index on our flair and our pricing and the fact that we would take a bet. So there's obviously going to be exceptions to that down the road, but we were known as probably the biggest layers at the time.
Yeah. Now, I'm told that you're somebody with huge self-belief and that you're very punchy when betting to your opinion. What makes you more right than other people?
Hard work, maybe. I'm not always right, obviously, but I think I do. It's a sport where American football, where you can get very opinionated, and you know, regardless of how much work you've done on a game, and that's what makes it a great sport for betting on and attractive for betting. But I like to put my money where my mouth is, obviously, but I wouldn't say I'm right any more than need be.
So what's your background in American football? How did you get so good at it?
I got into gambling very young. My father's American. My parents were split up, so I'd spend the holidays out in the States, mainly in Miami with his parents, where my grandmother, of all people, was a massive Dolphins fan and would watch the NFL religiously on a Sunday, and I'd sit there watching with her. Learned about the sport, understood the sport, came back from America and sort of got into betting, looked for American football because that's what I knew, realized that the bookmakers over here had very little knowledge or took any sort of time over the sport, so it was quite easy to walk into a William Hill shop and receive +5 on one team, walk into the Ladbrokes shop and receive +3 on the other team. You could really have your pick of some great prices.
Right, so how long has American football been popular, and how much has it grown since those days in the UK?
Back in those days it wasn't popular, but all the bookmakers had prices. The only way to find them would be to walk into a betting shop and ask for them. They'd have to call up, so it was a bit of an effort to get them, but they were there. And then I think I first joined City Index, and at the time I wanted to push American sports betting. That was what I was into, and I think the only other people that really were pushing it were a chap called Randy Haynes over at American Football Pools. He was producing a coupon each week, a bit like the soccer coupon, And between him and I, we sort of pushed American sports betting. And since then, obviously, as the sports got coverage on TV and sports betting in general has grown, yeah, it's just been growing immensely.
So how many UK-based punters give you a run for your money? Are they getting more and more clued up?
Very much so. Very much. So. There's a lot that do. There's a lot of very knowledgeable fans of American football in this country, and there's obviously a lot of very clever punters in this country, and there's a subset there of people that know absolutely what they're doing and are very tough to beat.
So is that part of the challenge, pitting your wits against the best?
Absolutely, yeah. And so, we don't always come out ahead.
So as a handicapper, how do you match up knowledge of US sports to actually setting the correct handicap?
That's the big question. Yeah, it's a very tough thing to do, because it's one thing having a thorough understanding of the game and knowing all the news and the team news and the injuries, but to actually translate that into a line is difficult. What we try to do here is put more of what we think the correct line should be, as opposed to the traditional way of trying to find a balanced line. We're not afraid to have an opinion, and we'll put a line that out that's a bit different to the rest of the market. But you know, trying to find what that right line should be is all part of the process I talked about earlier.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a bookmaker or a punter predominantly?
Well, I think now here at Red Zone, I'd probably call myself more of a bookmaker, but probably up till then, a punter.
What would you consider the main difference in strengths to be between a competent punter and a professional gambler?
The understanding value, that's the biggest difference. I mean, a competent punter could have a very good understanding of the sport and therefore place some sensible bets, but to make the jump to professional, you have to understand that everything has a price, and to understand what that price should be and therefore be able to take value and be able to say no when there's a team you fancy but that isn't the right price.
Okay, then, so can throw people a crumb. When is the best time to obtain the best value in the NFL?
I don't think there's any set time. I think the opening lines are, there is some value in the opening lines on a Sunday night or a Monday. Limits are quite small, so you're not going to get a large position, but throughout the week they remain relatively stable, and the biggest moves come on the Sunday itself, and I think that's where you can get some real value, is after a big line move that's been exaggerated, and you can get some value the other way.
Okay, what sort of teams do you like to back who are getting a lot of points head start?
That are getting a lot of points. I would go for a team that has a good passing game and has a good run defense. When a team takes a lead late in the game, they'll tend to run the ball to keep the clock running. If you've got a decent run defense, you can stop that and get the ball back. And then, of course, you need a decent passing game to come down the field and take advantage. So if I'm getting a lot of points, I want a team that's going to be capable of giving me some chances at the end.
And the other way?
Giving up points.
Yeah.
I'm reluctant to give up points in the NFL. It's a sport that tends to lend itself towards comebacks. As I just said, a team will run the ball to try and run the clock out and end up giving the ball back. And then defensively, they'll play more of a soft zone that allows a lot of completions. It's a dangerous thing to do, to give up points in the NFL. But if I'm going to do it, I'd be more confident with a team like New England or nowadays the Rams, who have coaches that aren't afraid to run up the score a little bit. Something that used to be an absolute no-no in the NFL. The gentleman's agreement was to only score as many points as needed to win. But these guys will rub it in your face.
Okay, Steve, going back to the early days, why did you ditch being trying to be a bookmaker to work for spread betting firms in the first place?
Well, I started off my career at City Index, where I worked with some pretty smart people there, Mark Harper and Angus Hamilton. When I left there, I worked in a few places, but as I say, ended up setting up that betting shop and sports line just before Angus Hamilton, who went on to start Sporting Index. He was the guy that got Compton Hellier involved, that raised the money to start Sporting Index, and he wanted me to be part of that, but obviously having just started Sportsline, it was difficult. I think being young, I had done myself a bad deal with Sportsline, and I wasn't really taking advantage of the position. So Sporting Index did me a favour actually and effectively bought me out of Sportsline to come and join them. So I joined them a few months after they began.
Okay, and I did a bit of research, and I'm told that they used to send you to the USA to watch pre-season games. And was that expense worth it? And can, given that pre-season can be misleading?
Well, actually, I was already going to training camp. My first training camp trip was while I was at Sportsline. And when I joined Sporting Index, I made it clear that this has to be part of my routine. I should also point out that I paid for it myself. They didn't pay for it, but I carried on doing that. I've been to training camp every year since then, so that's 28 years or something. Back then it was extremely valuable. No internet, no information. The lines wouldn't move. The futures prices wouldn't move based on anything in pre-season. And you could learn a lot about teams by attending the training camp, things that nowadays you get on Twitter. The moment someone's looking great or the moment something happens, it's all on Twitter or on the news. Preseason games themselves is not really part of it. I mean, I watch preseason games not to see teams play, but to perhaps see individual players or perhaps certain aspects of a preseason game. But I mean, I couldn't tell you one result from a preseason game that I've even attended. It's all about seeing individual players.
Okay, so there's no betting on them?
There is betting on them.
You just swerve it.
I don't tend to get too involved, but if there's something I see in training camp that seems to make the line for the preseason game wrong, I will have a bet. For instance, this last August, I was up in Minnesota for the joint practices between the Jags and the Vikings, and spent 3 days with them, and then they played a preseason game, and there was an edge to be gained from seeing their joint practices and then having a bet on the game.
Okay, now those days of spread betting, I'm led to believe they were quite hedonistic, work hard, play hard. Were the pickings really that easy in those days on American football?
They were to a certain extent, yes. I mean, it's gotten harder and harder very quickly, but back in the early days, it certainly was relatively easy pickings. That closed down quite a lot, and it's been hard work to try and keep ahead of the curve on that front. But certainly in the early days, on all sports really, that it was easy pickings. I mean, we had some of the smartest guys at Sporting Index on that trading floor in the early days. People like Alistair Hunter, David Garbaz, Dominic Willand, some of the guys that, you know, that are still industry leaders now. And I learned a lot from them. They certainly pointed me in the right direction in terms of where those easy pickings were, and we got hold of as many of them as we could.
And do any of those guys take you on now?
No, they tend to follow my opinions, but that's more out of friendship, I think, than anything else.
Right, so now you're back in bookmaking with Red Zone. Was that really just to pit your opinion against all comers to much bigger stakes?
To a certain extent, it's a way of scaling up what I've been doing anyway. But it's also because I do see a gap in the market, in American sports betting in the UK. I think that it is underserviced, but also the way the industry's moved. Bookmakers now have become so much more of a marketing company that rather than bookmakers, and all the odds are coming through price feeds, and there's no real input into those odds, and because of that, risk management's very defensive, and it's getting harder to get any value out there. And what we want to do here is sort of go back a little bit to the old school ways of having some opinion, having some flair, putting some prices out that offer some value, but hopefully keeping the value slightly on our side.
I mean, with the betting exchanges a big influence, are they ultimately right at the off?
For American sports, I wouldn't say exchanges necessarily. It's not quite the same as racing or football or something. I think the American sports markets follow the sort of offshore or American-facing bookmakers, places like Pinnacle and Betcris and those sort of places, sort of are more the market, and that the exchanges tend to follow what they're doing. And as far as them being correct at kickoff, a lot of the times, yes, and as I was saying earlier, I think a lot of the times, you know, a big price move, you know, there can be a wave of money for a team that forces a line at kickoff to be much different to the original line, and at that point, I'd say there's every chance it could be wrong.
Yeah, so you say that you like to sort of bet to an opinion and sort of stick to it. At what point is there when so much money is sort of coming in against your opinion that you have to reevaluate, or do you stick to your guns no matter what?
No, there will be a limit to what we'll take before we move the price. It's always something I don't like doing, moving the price. I mean, you can suddenly get hit back the other way, but there's definitely a limit, at least for the time being. There's a limit to what we'll take. It's a decent limit, but it's there is one.
Now, would that depend on the source rather than the weight of the money, or a bit of each?
A bit of each. So there's certainly people that bet big with us that we respect, and there's a big difference between taking a big, you know, six-figure bet and taking lots of smaller bets. We'll judge each bet as it comes in.
Okay, now you've obviously got your finger on the pulse in the US. Have you got sort of like the modern version of the ticker tape coming in for, you know, constantly keeping you up on the news and, you know, 24 hours a day?
Yes, it was a lot more fun back in the old days before the internet and before Twitter and all that, but you know, you could really sort of be ahead of the game. But nowadays, as I say, Twitter is, everything's on Twitter. But yeah, I've got my network of beat writers that I've become friends with at the training camps over the years, and they keep me up to date on things at practices and things happening within the team that aren't widely reported. But it's tough now to get an edge with so much news out there, but I feel like I've got as much a finger on the pulse as anyone.
Yeah, so you could get that little bit of that little snippet slightly quicker than social media breaks it.
Sometimes, and sometimes there's small things that aren't really newsworthy that actually will affect prices. Those are the good ones when there's going to be a formation change, a slightly less big name players going to start instead of another lesser named player. It doesn't make news, but it actually affects matchups and our betting.
Yeah, so your interpretation compared to other people's also play a lot into it as well.
Yeah.
So the days of the Bloomberg machine and tuning into US Forces Radio are gone.
Yeah, but they were fun. The Armed Forces Radio, 873 medium wave, they would always fade out just as the most important moment in the game. And Bloomberg, yeah, those were the good days.
So assuming that in the internet age, as you've just said, you know, the news gets out there quickly, just as easy for UK punters as American punters to get informed?
Yes, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, it's all there. It's a question of timing, you know, being the difference between American and UK punters, I suppose, would be the time difference. A lot of things happen when UK is asleep, and then you wake up and it's too late to react.
So this is a 24-hour operation?
For sure.
This is up day and night?
Yeah.
So do you often get the phone call in the middle of the night and say, something's happening?
No, I try and keep that side of things separate. I'm up most nights anyway through the night, so if the call comes in, I'm there, but otherwise I've got some very capable guys that will handle it.
Now, when I was Googling you, Steve, you advised punters to read local regional papers for up-to-date reports on their local teams. Now, there must be an absolute mountain of information out there that you need to sift through as well. So do you employ people just to trawl the internet and read up the local Cleveland Rag and that sort of thing?
Not just to do that, but we all on the team here certainly do our share of trawling through. But I guess it's for your own benefit too. I mean, we're all punters here too, and any sort of edge you can get, that's where you get it from. So what helps your personal betting helps the business.
So is it like a nationwide spy ring you've got out in America with each team having a mole that gives you the bell when there's something happens?
Not quite all of them, but there's a few, and you know, people move on and stuff, so it's not as quite a bigger network as it used to be. But and I actually just recently got cut off from a couple of teams, so when they found out what I did.
Now, you don't just specialise in NFL, but you also take bets on all sorts of other American sports, baseball, basketball, etc.
Yeah.
Is there a lower sort of league level that you'll go to? If somebody rings you up and wants a fairly obscure sort of match priced up, would you have priced those matches up anyway, or would you price it up on request?
Well, we cover all the major leagues, so the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball. So we'll cover all those matches. I suppose in college sports, there'll be some lower level colleges that we won't bet on, but we cover most of them. We even have minor league baseball. So yeah, I think most things are covered, and yeah, if it's not, then the request a bet service will do its best.
So where do you start when pricing up these more obscure markets where you've got, I assume, relatively little information?
Yeah, those are the fun ones. It goes back to old school, more feel pricing, which I enjoy. But obviously it's a lot less accuracy in those, but that's what it comes down to, research, looking at statistics and coming up with more of a feel price.
And is there a defense mechanism if somebody opens an account and then suddenly wants one of those bets up to a large amount?
Yes. We probably wouldn't accommodate something obscure in a large amount for someone's first bet.
So where do you start when you start forming these more complicated markets, the handicaps, etc.? What is there, like a point zero where you start sort of working out from?
Obviously there is a line out there, so there's a Vegas line, as it's known, which is a base. We don't use it as a base, but it's certainly a guide for when we come up with our prices. We can see how different we are, and then it's a case of deciding how much of an edge we have, depending on where we put it outside of the Vegas line. So we can't necessarily just, if we make the line 9 when the line is 7, we're not necessarily going to put a line of 9 up, but we want to find a nice balance where we will attract the money without actually jeopardizing the value that we're getting.
Do you sort of effectively hedge as a firm in advance if you see somebody's priced up and you think, well, you're wrong there? Would you sort of fill in another bookmaker?
Not necessarily. There is a prop trading element to the company, that might take advantage of something like that, but it's not something that would go into the actual trading side of things.
Okay, from a personal point of view, you specialised in spread betting in your early years. Is that still a medium that you look at to get on?
No, not at all. It's there's only two spread betting firms really, and I can't really bet with the company I worked for 23 years. And the other one, well, they don't seem to want to take my bets anyway. So it's not something to look at. One of the biggest frustrations as a punter for me is putting a lot of work into markets, and whether they're more obscure markets or whether the mainstream markets, and then finding there's a lot more work trying to get the bet on, and then ultimately failing to get the bet on and having wasted all that time. So with spread betting, it falls into that category. I don't bother.
Are there other specialist firms in the UK or abroad that you can get on with that, you know, sort of are interested in taking you on?
Yeah, actually, American sports, we're quite lucky with, because there is liquidity out there, and there are places outside of the UK that will take decent bets on American sports. On the core markets, it's a lot harder to get any bets on to win a division or to win the Super Bowl or even a first touchdown scorer, but for the core markets, for handicaps and total points and money lines, there's generally enough of a market out there to get on.
And what would be your favourite market to bet on personally?
The favourite one is touchdown scorer markets. I think it's something that's not priced up accurately enough. Obviously, a handicap line on a game is never going to be too far wrong, but touchdown scorer markets, you can get a much bigger edge in if you can get a bet on.
And is there a market that, as a bookmaker, you have to offer because everybody else does, but you wish you didn't have to? The Achilles heel we're looking for.
Teasers. Teasers are a great thing. They're an American thing. But there are certain scenarios in where a teaser is betting to the wrong side of the percentage for a bookmaker.
Okay, now you've made your livelihood has been betting and taking bets on the NFL. Are you like a huge fan? Would you turn up with your scarf and your jersey and go and watch a match somewhere? Put yourself out to go and see it just for pleasure?
Absolutely. I'm hugely passionate about American football. Love the sport. I've loved it all my life. I've made it my life, and yeah, I watch it as much as I can.
And who's your team?
Absolutely no team. No emotion in gambling.
So, finally, what is the best advice you'd give to somebody who loves NFL purely as a fan, and they want to start putting their knowledge to good work to try and win a few quid off of you? What would you tell them to start studying or to pay special attention to?
I'm very much a fundamentals guy. I believe in studying the matchups, each one-on-one matchup in a game. Every player on the team has a role to play on every single play during an American football game. And my advice would be to study those matchups to see which team has an edge in each individual matchup, and combining that to find the right price for that team to win. It's hard work, and it's delving deep, but that's the best way in my opinion.
And when they come to their own opinion, they give you a ring on Red Zone?
Absolutely.
Brilliant, Steve Bowman. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Look out for our regular money-back offers, including Pipped at the Post on selected horse racing and Saved by the 90s for all Premier League and televised championship matches. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.